Pop Culture Meltdown.
Welcome to the first episode of Pop Culture Meltdown. I am your host, Chris Libertini, along with Lou Pellegrino. Sweet Lou Pellegrino, how are you, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm doing well. How are you?
I am absolutely fantastic. We are going to be doing big things on this podcast. We are going to become, well, like you just said a second ago, household names.
Well, it's wishful thinking. Maybe it'll happen. We'll see.
Well, I think we're going to be absolutely fantastic. Welcome to Pop Culture Meltdown. We talk to all the experts in pop culture. We talk to the experts in news. We talk to experts in sports. We talk about the latest, hottest things this week.
I am pumped.
I want to talk about your boy, Alec Baldwin. They have that movie coming out with the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who the Joker is? It's going to be Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes.
Joaquin?
No, that's real wrong.
What do we say?
Joaquin. It's
all
Joaquin
right.
Phoenix.
Yo, Joaquin, what it is, man? How you is, man?
You
what's
don't
up,
know
Joaquin?
How to Joaquin?
Yeah, it's Joaquin, man.
He only played Johnny Cash.
Listen, he walked the line many times.
You
all
don't
I got to say.
Name Joaquin
yeah,
Phoenix.
It's Joaquin.
You almost had me say it wrong because in my head I'm going, have I been saying it wrong all
right.
these years?
Was Chris actually right? No, Chris was wrong.
Yes, yeah, very wrong.
So Alec Baldwin was supposed to play Bruce Wayne's father.
Correct.
And what do you say? The Twitterverse
mm-hmm.
was a buzz.
Oh, yeah.
And then out of nowhere, Baldwin comes out and mm-hmm. says, I am in no way playing Bruce Wayne's father.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Well, what's the reason?
I believe they wanted him to be sort of a Biff Tannen type character from Back to the Future 2. And if you're not catching my pop culture reference.
What are you looking at, butthead?
I believe they wanted him to play a Donald Trump type of guy.
Oh, that's insane. And of course, he does the Donald Trump impersonation
sure.
on Saturday Night Live.
But here's the thing. Okay, and this is just my thinking. I'm sure other people have had this thought. But when you play someone as a caricature of themselves or
uh-huh.
a parody of
uh-huh.
themselves, it's easy for them to love you because you or like you because they're also making you're making fun of someone who's in the public eye, who's not very popular with certain people, who's very popular with others. So the people who are fans of his look at Alec Baldwin and say, that's a terrible thing. That's nothing like. But the people who don't like Donald Trump see that and they're like, oh my God, this is the greatest impersonation. When Alec Baldwin does SNL, the next day, his name's in the paper. It's, hey, Alec Baldwin did it again, hit it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
If Alec Baldwin plays a guy like Donald Trump in a movie, people may not like Donald, may not like Alec Baldwin because he's not going to get that praise because he's actually playing kind of a jerky character, where when he does Donald Trump tongue-in-cheek on SNL, like I said, parody, comedy, what have you, you know, it's easier to like him. And even if you don't like what he's doing, you could at least say, well, you know, his impression's pretty good.
For sure. I mean, I fell in love with him so many times over the years with the different roles that he plays. Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock.
Sure.
Pretty much any movie he's ever been in, he's slayed it. Now, I want to bring up something. Lou, how old are you, my friend?
I don't want to say.
Just
I'm old.
You're above 38 years old.
Sure.
I am 38 years old, and I used to get home late at night, and I used to get home from the mall, and I used to turn on a specific channel.
Who was at the mall late at night?
Listen. I used to turn on a specific channel, the opening credits.
Sure.
From HBO back in the day, and what would Chris Libertini want to watch? Not the feature films.
No, the adult channel.
The adult
stuff,
movies. Yeah.
Emmanuel 4.
Yep.
I used to watch all of those
right.
movies.
Skinamax,
well,
essentially.
Well, the funny thing is I had relatives. We didn't have cable in Queens, which is where I'm from, for a long time because I lived on a block with a lot of people who did not want to put the telephone poles in the backyards
mm-hmm.
to get the cable strung up on the houses and all that stuff. And so my saving grace was my cousins. They all had cable. They had HBO. They had MTV. And I can remember back in the day, there was a brown box. It was about the size of a book, maybe a little bit smaller, and it just had buttons on it. And you had a little wheel on the side, and there was a white strip. And if it was on the top row, those were the top numbers, and you could click it to the middle and then to the bottom numbers.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin and other kids figured out that if you didn't have certain channels, all you had to do, the box only went up to like channel 58. But if kids knew that Playboy was 68, you could hit channel 6 and channel 8.
Exactly correct.
And it would
yes.
give you 68.
Yes, of course.
And it
of
would
course.
Be, you know, I mean, like, I think the first naked lady I ever saw was probably like a pixelated, you know, like, oh my God, leave the antenna. Wait, oh, rabbit ears. Okay, leave it. Stay there. You know, that was what it was. I mean,
yep.
it was just like a a mutilated picture of like scrambled cable, but that's how we watched Playboy back in the day.
But you know, at 11:30 at night, you had a buddy sleepover, and programming on HBO would be Skinamax.
Absolutely.
It would be Real Sex. It would be...
Please, I used to come home and watch Real Sex Now, and then I stopped watching Real Sex because one of my mother's family friends was actually on there doing a question, like a man on the street question. I was like, and they asked her, where's like this craziest place you ever had sex? And I'm like, I don't want to know.
Right. She's like, Lou's bedroom.
Yeah, right. That was, God, no. No, 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 no.
Well,
no, no.
The point I'm even bringing this up is because HBO, and I actually noticed this about a month and a half ago when I went to my HBO on demand and I would look for quote unquote late night.
Right.
And they didn't have late night.
So no more Cat House.
No more Cat House.
Right. No more Katie Morgan.
No more Katie Morgan. Taxi Cab Confessions.
Oh, that was a great show.
All that. All that gone. It's all gone. It's all gone.
Wow.
So HBO is making a conscious decision and going, you know what? We're not going to do that anymore.
All right.
And I got to be honest with you.
Hey, listen, if they're the home of Sesame Street, I mean.
But why can't you be all things to all people?
I know. Some people are just changing. And you know what? Maybe they're realizing nobody's watching that at night. So if they feel like...
Come on, nobody's watching
that
at night.
Maybe they had some sort of focus group. Maybe they had some sort of ratings that more people are watching Hard Knocks and would rather watch reruns of Hard Knocks than, you know...
Katie Morgan.
Reruns of...
But I mean, that was such an important thing growing up to even learn about sex. I'm being serious. I'm being dead serious. I mean, we came from the VHS area. I mean, now you go type in lesbian Nazi hooker porn that like to get peed on Thursdays under a full moon.
Yeah, that's a little too much for me.
I'm just saying, you could find it.
Of course.
You could find anything.
Oh, well, yeah, you could find anything if
back,
you look.
But back in the day for you and I, it was whatever porno magazine your dad had in his closet.
Yep.
Mine, he had LaToya Jackson on the cover of Playboy.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This is what I had to be subjected to. And then I would watch HBO.
Yeah, of course.
And I'd be like, oh, my God. This is how I'm going to learn about
sex.
That
was the only place you were able to see boobs because you weren't really going to, you know, I don't remember Showtime growing up. I don't remember the other movie channels that they have now. They weren't really, it was HBO or nothing.
Pretty much.
And I think that might have been actually one of their slogans at one point. It's HBO or nothing.
I don't mind it. All right, that wraps up this segment of Pop Culture Meltdown. It's episode one, Lou. Listen, congratulations. We've made it this far.
Woo.
I think you're absolutely fantastic. I'm looking forward to much, much, much more with you.
Oh, boy. Tell them what we have next. Who cares?
All right, let's go. Week one in the NFL with Sidney Rosenberg. Pop Culture Meltdown, Chris Libertini, Lou Pellegrino. We have our special guest this week is Sid Rosenberg from WABC. He's on Bernie and Sid in the Morning, and he's absolutely amazing.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, Chris. I love you. I love Lou Pellegrino. It's a big deal to be on this this podcast. By the way, I've got very high expectations for this podcast. I expect this to be like, forget about Marc Maron. You know, forget about... Who was the other guy that was on with Dr. Drew? Carolla?
Adam Carolla, yeah.
Right, forget about Gottfried. I expect this podcast to be the number one podcast on the 17th floor in this building.
Well, I appreciate that. I can't be bigger than yours, so yeah, I gotta...
Yeah, listen, yeah, we do about 30,000 downloads a day, so we're doing pretty good.
Hey, if I get 15,000 downloads, if people listen to us, 15,000 people... That's a lot of people.
Well, you'll have it this week because I'm on.
That's right. You'll tweet it out.
That's my Mike Francesa impression.
I love it. Let's talk about week one. Can the Browns win against the Steelers, Sid Rosenberg?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I don't know the exact statistic, Chris, but it's been like 16,000 in a row where basically Pittsburgh has beaten them. Cleveland plays them tough. You know, I know against the spread, the Steelers are usually a double-digit favorite and have a very difficult time covering against the Browns, if they cover at all. The Browns, obviously, you know, new quarterback, young kid in Baker Mayfield. There are a lot of guys in this business that think Cleveland may be the most competitive bad team in this league. And what I mean by that is they're going to be in games. They got a good defense. They can run the football. They got a good offensive line. So I think in the end, they're going to play the Steelers tough. They usually do. But to expect a victory, like a money line play, I think that's probably a bit much.
All right. Moving on to this. Eli Manning. Does he still have it? What are we thinking? Are the Giants going to be a contender? They just signed Odell.
I think he does. Look, his last preseason game against the Jets, he goes 17 of 23, throws for almost 190, doesn't turn it over. They're not by in the end zone, but looked very, very sharp. Throwing to a bunch of guys. And Odell Beckham, by the way, didn't even play that game against the Jets. Now he's got Odell week one against Jacksonville. Giants have a brutal, not difficult, Chris, a brutal schedule for 6-7 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. And again, starting with the Jaguars, who were literally one play away from beating the Patriots and going to the Super Bowl last year. Tom Coughlin back in town in New Jersey. Very exciting matchup. But I think Eli's in for a good season. Offensive line is better. They got Soldier to protect his left side from the Patriots. They drafted that kid from Utah State, Hernandez, I should say. They got Saquon Barkley now running the football. Odell is signed. Shepard is back. The young tight end Ingram in his second year. That's a lot of weaponry on offense. I think if Eli stays healthy, he's in for a big year. And the Giants could be a 10-11 win team.
Look at you. All right, we'll stick with the QBs. The young QBs, who be the best out of these guys?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this crop of QBs as well because, you know, we heard so much about Sam Darnold. We've heard so much about Jake Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson. We saw what they did on Saturdays. I don't know if it's going to translate that well early on in their career into Sundays, but Sid, what's your make of these quarterbacks?
Moore's going to play in Baltimore. He's not going to start. So Joe Flacco's the starting quarterback there.
Okay.
Allen in Buffalo just got beat up badly by the Cincinnati Bengals in a preseason game. Got sacked 5 times, knocked down 20 times. That is a very bad football team right now in Buffalo. So even though Josh Allen may turn out to be a good quarterback, he's in a tough place. Josh Rosen, Arizona, he's not going to start either. So you look at the guys that are going to get playing time right away. You got to go to Sam Darnold. He's going to start week one against the Lions. The Jets have made that decision. They traded Teddy Bridgewater to the Saints for a third-round draft choice. They got McCown as the veteran backup. The Jets have a pretty good defense. They have a pretty decent stable of wide receivers, 2 pretty good running backs. They're not a terrible football team, but they're not great either. I expect Sam Darnold to go through some serious difficulties the first couple of weeks and get his lumps, especially week one, Monday Night Football in Detroit against Stafford and the Lions. But just because of the opportunity to play right away and on a team that shouldn't be terrible, 5 wins, but a decent competitive football team, I think Sam Darnold may be that guy.
Okay, I like it.
All right, Sid, listen, you've been in the New York area for a long time. We know each other a long time as well, and I just have to ask you, you know, I was very big on Saquon Barkley being drafted by the Giants, but what do you think? Is he going to go the route of so many other running backs from Penn State?
My man Lou, God, I love you. You know, Lou and I, we were great together when Pharrell, I was a guest of Scott Pharrell many times. Yes.
Around the bench, hey, you know
that's right.
That's Pharrell.
And Lou was always so good to me. Look, I think Barkley's going to be great. I know there's been a couple of guys that didn't go very well. Blair Thomas, one of those guys that the Jets took many years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't go very well. There's been a few others out of Penn State. One guy that did very well was Kurt Warner, not the same guy as a quarterback who played for the Rams, but the running back for the Seattle Seahawks many years ago. But I know there's 5 or 6 examples of guys that have not been very good. I think Barkley's going to be great. I think Barkley's going to be Tiki Barber Part 2. And Tiki, the last 5 years of his career with the Giants, was a 2,000-yard back between rushing the football and catching passes out of the backfield. That's how versatile Barkley will be. Now, look, there's other guys who want the football. Obviously, Beckham wants the ball. Mm-hmm. You're paying him $100 million. Ingram wants the ball. Shepard. So Eli's got to find a way to spread the wealth amongst all these guys. Yeah. But I do think between his breakaway ability and catching passes out of the backfield, Saquon Barkley will not be a bust like a lot of these Penn State guys. I think he'll be a star for the football Giants.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Sid Rosenberg. We think you're fantastic.
We will definitely
see you next week. We really appreciate you coming on. You can catch Sid Rosenberg on Twitter, at Sid Rosenberg, I assume.
That's right. And, Sid Rosenberg on Instagram as well, Facebook as well. Catch me and Bernie, 6 a.m. weekday mornings on WABC. I love you guys. Kick some major effing ass.
All right, Sid. Love you, buddy.
Thank you very much, Sid Rosenberg. We'll see you next week.
Hey, Sid. Thanks so much, man.
Let's go! Let's go! It's time to play!
Pop Culture Meltdown. Chris Libertini, Lou Pellegrino, Sid Rosenberg, ladies and gentlemen.
Never fails to entertain.
The guy's
always entertaining.
He's bald, he's good looking, and he knows about sports.
Yeah, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I'll let you figure out which 2.
Right, exactly.
Tell them what we have next.
Yeah, we're going to tell you what we have next. And it's John Batchelor coming at you.
And now it's time for news on Pop Culture Meltdown. It's A Bite with Batchelor, starring John Batchelor. Let's eat food and get knowledge.
It's Pop Culture Meltdown. It's Chris Libertini. It's Lou Pellegrino. We have John Batchelor on for his weekly segment talking about news and getting a little bite with Batchelor. Hey, John, how are you today?
I'm looking at two blue M&Ms.
Let's talk about this. So I have peanut M&Ms here for you.
I was going to say it's better than two little Viagra pills. Right. But...
John, what are your thoughts on, do you like peanut M&Ms? Do you like regular M&Ms? What's the story here?
It's the color blue.
Okay, so you just like blue M&Ms.
Yeah, it's the color blue because blue is the hardest thing to associate with food.
Okay.
The hardest thing.
Okay.
It's also my favorite color in the sky, the ocean, blue, right?
Okay.
The Air Force One.
Love it.
And if you choose blue, you won't eat so many.
Is that a proven fact?
Because you don't eat blue.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you just, you're conditioned not to eat blue
right.
things.
Right. You tell yourself, well, it's chocolate, it's a peanut, I can eat this, but you're discouraged as opposed if you go with the yellow, red, and the rest of the colors.
And the green, right, of course.
Right.
So you're like, you're more of a rock star where they make their riders and they say, I only want blue M&Ms and that's it backstage.
Right. But you'll have some left over at the end of the evening.
But do you know why that was? Someone actually pointed this out to me. Van Halen was famous for having a M&M clause in their rider saying they wanted M&Ms but they only wanted brown M&Ms or the green M&Ms omitted.
Amazing.
The reason they did that was because they would put that as maybe the 13th or 14th list in their rider,
right?
The 13th or 14th position. They just wanted to make sure whoever was reading the rider went all the way through. So it was a test.
Unbelievable. And it's number three on John Batchelor's rider, so it's all good. It's very
brown,
important.
Brown M&Ms would disappear.
Disappear.
Well,
they'd
on.
Be gone.
All right, now they're gone. This
chocolate.
This is a fully empty.
Go on. Total chocolate.
The brownless M&Ms are no more.
Very good. So John Batchelor, we are here. We are talking about why Google doesn't rank high right-wing outlets highly.
That's the allegation.
That's the allegation. I'm asking you. You are the man with all the wisdom.
We have some anecdotes. One anecdote within these last hours. Well, it's chiefly important that the President of the United States has tweeted about this more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Director of the National Economics Council, Larry Kudlow, a colleague of mine, has said that we're looking very closely at Google because there might be regulation here. The President has said, no, we don't need to regulate. We just need some common sense. Two anecdotes. One, in a Google search of the word Trump, the 100 top picks are dominated by CNN and other major media, but the only two associated conservative publications are Fox News and the Wall Street Journal.
So you're saying out of 100 searches, what comes up is exactly what you just said.
Right. Two out of 100. That doesn't seem random. Second anecdote from the president is that a search of the Google page or the YouTube page in some fashion, the day of his State of the Union message, compared to the same page the day of an Obama State of the Union message. Obama's State of the Union, says the president, was featured all day. President Trump's State of the Union message, there were moments when it was on the page, and then there were other moments when it was not. Google, as of my last reading, has not explained that absence. Those are two anecdotes.
Interesting. And why do you think, your personal opinion, why do you think what this would be happening? Because you and I had a conversation yesterday where we were just kind of going back, and I always find you fascinating, John. Like
Jack Dorsey, who heads Twitter
and
is much in the news because he will or will not talk to Congress about Twitter's strange conduct for some time, says in a homey fashion, listen, we're a smaller company than you think we are. We've got a lot of young people working for us. And the people making these decisions are young and they're liberal and progressive and they live in the San Francisco area. So what do you think? And I find that an attractive explanation.
Do you think it's like a Mark Zuckerberg defense?
I think that they're pleading not having looked at it. And now is the time to examine. I also think that it's not going to be enough.
Do you think it's something we had talked about that they do this something what they did to the cable companies back in the 80s, where they disbanded all the cable companies and you'd have something like Google Arizona and Google New Jersey.
The breakup Ma Bell. That's what happened.
Ma Bell,
the
sorry
AT&T
about that.
Case. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that Google and Facebook and all of the social media organizations are now so big that they can be vulnerable to regulation. Before regulation would happen, of course, their major stockholders would step in and say, we've got to clean this up. The usual way you clean this perception, this isn't science here. This is perception, human perception. The usual way you clean it up is you let the board of the company direct the executives to make certain that there is clarity and transparency for the users, because it's a monetary. You're going to lose money.
Right.
Yeah.
They're making money while you're losing.
There's also
perception?
An opportunity for someone to come along and say, "I am the GOP Google."
Interesting.
Do you think this is like the first time that a president has really like looked into these things? Because I don't remember this. And look, I'm not talking about the George H. You know, Herbert Walker Bush days. I'm not talking about Bush one. And I mean, because the internet was not even really a thing back then. But this is the first time that I could remember somebody in office going out there and saying this stuff and saying, "Well, you know, when you look me up, my positive stories don't come to light. It's kind of swayed this way or swayed that way." And do you think he might have brought this on himself at all because of the way he's waged a war again on the media, the fake news?
What's happened here is that we don't have answers. You're asking good questions and we don't have answers, and that's not good.
Right.
In other words, the internet's power, our ability, that little machine we carry around, the iPhone, that power did not exist when Obama was elected. That was year two or year one of the iPhone. And there were still smartphones out there from companies that have disappeared. We now have a uniform code, either the Android Galaxy or the iPhone and system. And so these questions are now necessary because we have that power, that authority. During the Obama years, you can reflect and say, you know, they were simpatico. All those dinners that the White House wanted us to see with the president, shirt sleeves rolled up, sitting with Zuckerberg and the rest of the crowd, all young billionaires, wonderful for
everybody
them.
Everybody telling jokes.
Yes, fine. Yeah. All sitting in Silicon Valley, so there's no tension there. But I think we have to look at the fact that there are fussy rules about the FEC saying in-kind donation. And if you are directing your staff or letting your staff direct itself towards a leaning to one side or the other, somebody's going to say, "Hey, you need to be regulated."
And do you think that with what just recently happened with the net neutrality rules, how those have been changed, that this will kind of be down that sort of slope?
Net neutrality is a brilliant word, brilliant, brilliant terminology. I credit whoever came up with it.
I won't take credit for that.
I did it. It was me.
For something that is, in fact, regulation. That's what they were looking at, to regulate the internet.
Okay.
The Republican Party threw it overboard. And so we're back to the bad old days of 2015. That's where we are. That's how recently net neutrality actually happened. So that is a partisan matter. I can't decide it here, but I don't think it connects directly to the opportunity here for the large stockholders to direct the board to say, you've got to make transparency here, because the doubt has been raised and it's not going to be put away by you saying it's not happening.
I love it.
We need a study group. We need people brought in. Mm-hmm. We need people to look at your algorithms. Don't be so secretive. We need to know who the people are making these decisions. Mm-hmm. For example, their ability to block or at least limit the search of certain names in Twitter. I didn't know about this. I've been reading about it. And four significant members of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives complained to Twitter that their names were being blocked in some fashion. I think it's called shadow banning or shadow blocking in some fashion when the search was done. Significantly, these four names are associated with the Freedom Caucus, which is the most conservative part of the Republican House, and very prominent names in the news. Devin Nunes of California, Jim Jordan of Ohio. And because of that, you go, is this random? Is this an accident? Who made this decision? And Dorsey did not provide an answer immediately. Again, it's perception. I can't prove it. I'm not proving it. I'm commenting on what's in the news.
And it's interesting because, you know, you see the news differently from I see the news. You have a breadth of experience and you look at it. I look at it from the way of being a 38-year-old guy. The internet's new, and now it looks like they're trying to put limits, quote unquote, on the internet. That's kind of how I look at this. And it's also interesting because it's like I'm just as thought process as you. I don't know what's going on with this either. And I think it's rather precarious to look at it and be like, come on, dude. Like, that's the answer you have. You're a freaking CEO of a multi-billion dollar right. company, for God's sake.
The technology is out there. You can figure it out. This isn't something where it's like, hey, you know, this is a good question. We have to go back to the drawing board and figure this out.
It's like, John, when you ask your grandma, come on, what's in the sauce? I don't know. I just put this here and this here. I don't know.
Well, it's the same thing with podcast algorithms as well. Who spends time listening? They know. They know who's listening and how long they're listening for. They just don't want to release that information yet because it'll probably turn the podcast world upside down. It's the same thing where we used to come from, where we came from. We came from SiriusXM. SiriusXM does not subscribe to ratings. Why? Because if I host a show on SiriusXM and for whatever reason it's popular, I can go to my bosses and say, look at that, I'm the most popular show on Sirius. I deserve to be making more than $36,000 a year.
The technology is new, but as it ages, we get control of it. Yeah. I want to give an example. When I first got, you're younger men. I'm an older person. So I first bought an IBM computer back in 1982 when it was just on the market. You know, you could buy a floppy disk one or a hard disk drive. Mm-hmm. And
came in like
there was a machine
boxes.
Called DOS, and the screen had no graphics on it. There was no mouse. You were just sitting there. All right, fine. When I bought that machine, it was a marvel. I didn't know how it worked. I didn't understand why when I typed here, it showed up there, and then I could give the order to the printer, all of that. Well, it's foolishness now. I mean, just absolute foolishness. I've got an iPhone that can do all of this. I don't think mm-hmm. about how it does it. I know exactly how it does it. I know about the
God
chips.
Sakes.
I know about the power, yep. all of that.
The cloud okay. connecting.
Okay,
you know.
What's that? 30 years. So all of this, we're going to solve. I mean, Dorsey will be an old man. We'll solve it.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
And there'll be another Dorsey come along saying, gee, I don't know why it happened. These are waves. So I'm trying to be as forgiving as possible that I don't think this was the kind of prejudice that comes from malice. I think it was a part of having new technology, not understanding it yourself, dealing mostly with the problem you have of earnings quarterly, and also that you have a stock price that's fluctuating, which is what big social media does, and you don't think about all the effects of your secondary effects of your social media enterprise. You live in a bubble, which is Silicon Valley. California is one-sided, and so around you there are no checks and balances on
it's
your
like the
opinions
Wild West,
on
literally.
Your opinions, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what you have is the result of somebody not looking in and saying, as you would have said to your grandmother, what's in the sauce?
Right, yes.
And now the president's saying what's in the sauce. We're all saying, hey, you know, we wondered about that.
Right.
And when we saw that Dorsey and Zuckerberg says, well, we're now going to look at this closely. And they've got a conservative team at Facebook. Well, we don't need a conservative team at Facebook.
Right.
We need a level playing field, or we need somebody else to balance you off. We need a Fox to your MSNBC. Do you want to be the social media that decides, I'm the search for MSNBC? Do you want to do that?
Right.
It's probably got a business model attached to it.
It's almost like the equal time rule
right.
for radio.
That's
fine. You know, you offer
Again,
one product, you offer the other.
I don't
the
want the
guy.
Government involved in this because the government is the post office. Okay. And you don't invite the post office into your home. Okay.
Definitely
you just
not.
Don't do it.
No,
fine.
No,
fine.
No.
Fine. CIA is post office behind closed doors. Okay. FBI is post office with guns. It's the post office. Okay.
I don't know. So, I'm paperless. I don't even get mail delivered to me anymore.
So we don't want the post office regulating our social media.
Right.
The market will do it.
Okay.
You'll reward the company that's more transparent, that can do a broader business, because the one mistake you make in the internet, and I've known this about podcasting and you guys are learning it.
Not deleting your search history.
Not going big enough.
Okay.
It's a global market, global social media. I just talked to Moscow. Gmail in Moscow. Okay. You have to deal with the fact that there's no limits to your model. You can't. Try to imagine the 23-year-olds working on Twitter trying to figure out what is hate speech and what is not. Are they thinking what's hate speech to Moscow? Because
no.
Moscow's looking at what they're doing.
Yeah, cause, well, they don't have a viewpoint from
Moscow. Of course
Moscow.
Not.
Right.
So it's the kinds of censorship that's parochial and kind of childlike. And you just deal with it. And the president's called their attention to it because it could get worse.
John Batchelor, host of the John Batchelor Show. He's got a podcast. He's heard around the world. And he's awesome. He wears a bow tie every day. What about, how tall are you, John? 6'6"?
I used to be taller.
actually have one question before he gets out of here.
Sure,
because
of
I think I know how to say it, but I'm going to ask you, where did you grow up?
Where I grew up?
Yes.
Lower Marion Township.
Okay.
Of Philadelphia.
And how do you say Bryn Mawr? Is that where you're
from? Bryn Mawr. I was born in Bryn Mawr.
Okay. Yeah, right. I've seen it written down. I've heard so many people mangle it, and I'm glad I've been saying Bryn Mawr the right way for all these years.
Just lose the Y, think I.
Right.
Bryn Mawr.
There you go. Yeah.
Bryn Mawr.
Well, John Batchelor, thank you so much for coming on. We will see you next week. It is Lou Pellegrino, Chris Libertini. John Batchelor, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely unbelievable, John Batchelor. Louis Pellegrino, what are your thoughts on John Batchelor with the bow tie? Talk to me.
He's great. I could sit and listen to him talk for hours.
Seriously.
I'm a little disappointed that he had to leave so soon. But,
yeah.
You know, there's so many more things that I could get into with him. We were talking about HBO before, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, you know, he's a really good science fiction writer. I think he's been nominated for a bunch of awards. He might have even won a bunch of awards. But, yeah, I could listen to that guy talk all day.
So we're highlighting social influencers on our podcast
yes.
this month. Social influencers, people that are on Instagram, social media. They have a huge effect on your life. You follow them. You see what they get. They sometimes get brands to back them.
Sure.
And you know, it's the new ads in life.
Yep.
So, going forward, that's what we're going to do on the show for this month. We are highlighting a really, really awesome guy. He lives in Brooklyn, New York. His name is Coach Jason Ferber, and he has an Instagram account with 111,000 followers.
It's impressive. It's impressive. And considering how he got those followers, and he explains that to us when we talk to him, but I'll say this. The guy is impressive. You'll enjoy this conversation. And if you're a baseball fan, or if you're a father or a mother and you have a child who's playing, whether it's a boy or a girl, playing softball, playing baseball, you really, really, really want to listen to this guy as far as his coaching techniques, the way he goes about dealing with the kids that he coaches. And I ended up wanting to play baseball again from this conversation. So I really think you're going to enjoy it.
Fantastic. All right. Without any further ado on Pop Culture Meltdown, this is the premiere episode. And here's our first actual real guest. It's Coach Jason Ferber, Coach Ferber on Instagram. Oh, it's out of here. Pop Culture Meltdown, Chris Libertini, Lou Pellegrino. Got a special guest on. We're talking about social influencers. And we've got none other than Coach Jason Ferber. He's out of Brooklyn, New York. He's on Instagram at Coach Ferber. Guy's got 111,000 followers.
Insane. It's absolutely
really?
Insane.
This guy's a certified evaluator for Team USA. So he's like the Minaya of Brooklyn over here. He's Omar Minaya.
Give
of Brooklyn.
Him a little bit more credit
oh,
than
come
that.
On. He's a good looking Omar Minaya.
No, it has nothing to do with looks, it has to do with the players.
All right, fine. He manages the U.S. Elite 2019 national team. And here is Coach Ferber on Instagram. Here's a clip from his Instagram.
Coach Ferber here, guys. Back with another crispy Q&A. Today's topic for the day is how to create a strong relationship between player and coach.
Coach Ferber, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
So happy that you're Appreciate here, man. It. I just heard it in his voice. He went, hey! I'm like, yeah, he's from Brooklyn. He's Brooklyn. That's Brooklyn. Yeah. Let me guess. Kings Park area?
No.
Coney Island? No,
Coney Island.
I know. Coney Island. I was kidding.
Love it.
My detection's a little off these days.
It's all good. So we're talking about social media influencers. And the definition of it is, it says a social media influencer is a user on social media who's established credibility in a specific industry. A social media influencer has access to a large audience and can persuade others by virtue of their authenticity and reach. What do you think is the number one thing of how to communicate with younger kids to get them reach and retain them?
I think you got to entertain them, this generation. Mm-hmm. I think you have to entertain them to a certain degree. Especially if it's something that doesn't have to do with school, it doesn't have to do with education. I mean, there's parts of it. You're educating yourself and learning the game, but those social media, the kids on social media, what I found is, you know, out of those 111,000 followers, I'll be honest, probably 5,000 of them are kids that actually want to learn and get better. There's a lot of kids out there that are just watching because it's something that they wish they could do.
Right.
They enjoy seeing a kid hit a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
They enjoy looking at a kid that's a freak genetic athlete, you know, genetic freak that you go, This kid's 6'4", 210. He's a lefty stick, and he hits bombs, and he's a sophomore in high school. How's that even happen? Why not me? You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But I think what the reason that the whole thing was designed was, I think, was pretty interesting. I because I never intended for it to do. I didn't like come up with this idea and go, I'm going to make a page for baseball players across the world to learn how to play baseball. It wasn't about that. I have kids on my team, that U.S. Elite 2019 national team, mm-hmm. that are from 8 different states.
Wow.
Okay. So I have kids from, you know, Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, New York, New Jersey. So the great part about that is you get a lot of high level players because you have a big region to pick from, right? Downside is you can't really practice.
Right, yeah. When are you getting everybody together? I have a hard enough time getting 16 guys that live in New Jersey
right.
to practice.
So I depend. So what I depend on the coaches that are the local coaches that they're working with and communicating with those guys. I also would in the beginning was trying to set up webcams, Skypes, get together and have like a you know a pitching guy get on a webcam and do a Skype with. A webinar, right, with 8 different pitchers and give them their routine for the off season.
Awesome.
But what happened was, it was very difficult.
It's all about arm care, by the way.
Arm care. That's arm care, arm maintenance, right?
Sorry.
You know, what happened was, yeah. It was very difficult for the players to know who each other were and actually build a relationship because all they got together was for the games.
Mm-hmm.
That they would come to these tournaments, you got to showcase in front of these colleges, and at that point, you're really, even though it's not about yourself, you are trying to get a scholarship.
Of course.
Yourself. You're really trying to shine and compete and stand out.
Yep. If you don't get a hit, you're not getting another at bat.
Right.
Yeah.
But we all know the way to stand out on a baseball field is by playing together as one unit. So I was trying to figure out a way to build this chemistry. So I said in the beginning, those same videos that you see on that I put on Instagram, mm-hmm. the hitting videos or whatever it is, they were the same videos that I would put them on a group text and like, all the hitters, I would say, give one suggestion and one thing positive, some positive feedback, something you like about it, and give a suggestion, find out who the kid is. The kids were like, listen, after like 2 days of doing that, they're like, I don't want 32 texts coming in my thing. So this kid on my team, a shortstop, I didn't have an Instagram account at all at this time,
uh-huh.
right? 2 years ago, maybe, 2.5 years. It was really short time, relatively. Shortstop on my team, who I train over here in Riverside Park, named Ben Greenspan.
Ben Greenspan, there you go.
Benny Blanco.
Everybody
knows Benny Blanco.
Of course.
Because everybody like Carlito's
way. Nicknames to all.
Oh, that's great.
Guys.
Yeah, everybody gets a nickname if they play for me. Anyway, yeah. So, and they're usually gangsters or mafia,
right.
mafia guys.
Oh, sure.
Or killers.
That's the way it has to be.
Like
and
that.
Sometimes these kids have no freaking clue.
Well, they have
he's
no
saying.
Clue who it is.
And he's just like, oh, look at the Michael Phelps over here. Oh, look at this guy over here. And the guy just looks at Dick Ferber.
He's like, I have no idea. I called one kid Dick Butkus. He goes, I don't know. Who's Dick Butkus?
Oh, God. He's probably just making fun of him.
Yeah. So anyway, what happened was the kid, he basically said, hey, look, it's a very simple fix, coach. Just create an Instagram account and we can DM each other and figure out who each other is, right? That's how those kids communicate. They communicate through Snapchat. They communicate through Instagram. So I was like opposed to it because I said, I don't want to deal with this. I have to learn how to use Instagram.
Yeah. Huh?
Why would I want to do that? I hate Facebook.
Right,
why would I want to learn how to use Instagram?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, one day we were, I told him no, right? I told him no. We were hitting one day and he was waiting for his round of BP and he grabbed my phone and he set up the Instagram account himself. My shortstop is 14, 15 years old.
Amazing.
At the time. And he just put Coach Ferber. Just wrote it like that, just the way you see it now, never changed it. And he says, Coach, check this out. He goes, this is very simple. All you do, you take this video, you see where it says post. He goes, you just write in this caption right here. This is his height, his weight, who he is, his name, where he's from, and like whatever you want to do, and then send it. And then it started with 14 guys. That account had 14. They were just my players,
wow.
my team. And so once that happened, the kids were like, okay, now they had their way of communicating, what made it more comfortable. Then I started to entertain them because the kid goes, hey, check this out.
Right.
Ben said, I could put music on the back of these.
Oh, sweet.
I could put music on the back of these things. So we started making these mixtapes.
Uh-huh.
Right? And the mixtapes were, you know, he was putting this, his music on that. I said, let me put some old school, you know, Jay-Z and Notorious B.I.G. stuff that I listened to when I was growing up on it. And so it was just a form of entertainment. It was for entertaining the players. And then other people saw it, say, man, this guy's a crazy coach. He's out here nicknaming his players Luca Brasi and all these other crazy things.
That's fantastic.
So that's pretty much how it went.
I just think the greatest thing about you is, you know, I was saying this before during our pre-interview, is that, you know, you have essentially two careers. You have, you know, your Instagram career, and you have obviously your career for baseball, but it's literally one and the same. If you look at it, you know, I look at it as, you know, you got two things going on, which I, you know, people are just lucky to have one thing that they're good at, you know, but for you to harness this, social media and for you to have the following that you do is just so cool. And it's like, you know, who are we? You know, we're just guys that love baseball.
That's it.
And it's like, you're lucky enough. I always tell the guys that when we're playing, you know, I'll hit a single, I'll talk to the first baseman, and I'll be like, hey man, it's 9:30 in the morning, and I just hit a single, and we're playing baseball till at least 2:15 today. What problems can you have? What problems can you have? So it's like, you know, you get a chance to manage these kids. You get a chance to have real interaction. You get a chance to see growth from when Ben Greenspan was 14 to now he's 18-year-old stud, and he's getting picked up by Vandy, and he's going to start hitting crispy seeds.
He's going to William & Mary.
William & Mary.
Oh, wow. He's an academic kid. He's going to William & Mary.
But that's amazing to me, is that you could see them, and like, you know, you have your own vernacular. You know, you call line drives crispy seeds. You call, you know, you call people crispy that are like really cool.
Right.
You know,
and Cheetos. When you throw hard, it's not cheese, it's Cheetos. You're throwing Cheetos. Nice.
But it's so great because he'll say that to these kids, and the kids will immediately start laughing. He's broken down the third wall.
Yeah.
He's broken down the, but then when we're really doing something, he gets on their,
that's the tricky part. You can't be so, you know, you have to, you know, it was very, not difficult, but I had to find the balance between you can have fun, right? And I'll allow you the freedom to be able to be whoever you want to be out here, do whatever you want to do. But if you show a lack of hustle, or if you show me a lack of effort, or you're not a good teammate, you are going to get blown up and embarrassed in front of everybody out here, because that's part of it too.
Love
right?
It.
You got
to
be.
You have to do it.
Yeah. If you want, you can't have it one way. You have to, you know, if you're doing what's expected of you, then enjoy yourself.
Right.
Go out and compete and have fun and hang out with your homeboys and do all that stuff and hit bombs. But, you know, I'm not going to, these guys are a representation of me on a baseball field.
Right? Yeah.
If they are Cadillacing it down to first base and you know, rolling over on a ball to the pitcher and they jog it out and veer off out of line, you're running.
You're going to run it
after
out.
After the game, if you do that once, first you're getting pulled out of the game in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how many college coaches, 100 of them are watching you. If you miss a sign, if I give you a hit and run sign and you don't swing because the ball was 10 feet over your head, you're still coming out of the game right after.
Really? Even on that one?
Well, put it this way, if they don't swing, the catcher better miss that ball.
Got it. Okay.
That better be a wild pitch.
Yes, because if for some reason that catcher jumps up and makes a Yadier Molina grab and throws the guy out, that because we have a play.
A steal. Yeah.
Right? And we have a play going. These are the type of things that I won't stand for.
So, Coach, I'm fascinated by your life, what you do. Obviously, you know, baseball is very, very near and dear to your heart. You know, we were just talking about, you know, where you grew up, how you grew up, all that stuff. What do you think is the number one thing, obviously, you being a social media influencer, that you try and focus on when you make a post on your story or on your hard post to your page here?
Well, I think the number one thing is making sure that it's honest. You know, I like to speak the truth. I don't like to sugarcoat things too much because I don't think that helps young players. I also, you know, when it comes to communicating with the athletes, I think the number one thing is trust. You know, if I have the trust of the athlete, then he's going to retain more information. If he doesn't trust me and I'm just a random guy telling him what to do, then it's going to be a little more difficult to get that message across.
You know, one of the things that I marvel at when it comes to youth sports and just being coached is how sometimes, and I may sound like a get off my lawn guy here, it seems like the younger generation, they have all the answers. How are you dealing with, you know, imparting your wisdom to maybe like a kid who thinks he knows it all, sees it all. Because one of the things that drives me crazy, and I went off on a tangent here, and I'm sorry. You watch the Little League World Series, and I know you're dealing with, you know, all different age ranges, but when you watch the Little League World Series, you see the kid who gets up, and he's got the arm shield on, and he's got the batting gloves that he has to switch around every at-bat and after every pitch.
Like Nomar.
Right. Yeah. After a while, it's like, guys, you know, you're still 12, 11, 10, 13 years old, whatever it is. How do you get them out of, like, trying to implement what you see somebody like a Mike Stanton or Giancarlo Stanton or an Aaron Judge do, you know, where he has all the motions and the machinations and all that stuff where you're just like, guys, you're a long ways away from ever being in that spot. How do you impart that to kids?
Well, baseball, it's really easy to do that. You just put them in a situation where they fail. You just keep pumping up the velo until their way of style of doing it doesn't work anymore. You know what I mean?
So it's almost like knock them, not in a bullying type of way, but like knock them down to build them up and say, you think you could touch this kid? You're not.
Or yeah. I mean, too often we're getting in you see situations where, and that's one of the problems with, I think, specialized instruction these days. Specialized instruction, you see a ton of it. And what happens is,
as Chris just broke the microphone.
Yeah.
All right, I'm trying.
Chris. All right, we're good. So you see, if you're putting young players in specialized instruction too soon, what happens is that you see, put it this way, you're putting them in an environment where you're trying to make them succeed. If you're a dad, or if you're a rookie coach, an amateur coach, think about what you're doing in batting practice with a young kid. You're literally trying to run balls into the barrel of his bat so he feels good, right? So you want him, the athlete, to feel good. And even though most coaches are well-intended by doing that, that's not actually preparing them for game competition, what they really need to be doing.
Coach has been doing this so long that he actually just got picked up by MLB Network. He had a video where he had a left-handed hitter and a right-handed hitter, and they were going after, the same ball?
Yeah. We were messing around. I mean, some of the stuff that people find interesting is just my twisted brain thinking about things going, I wonder what happens here. And I think that's what makes, I think that's one of the things that, make coaches and instructors and trainers, you're constantly searching for more knowledge. You're constantly searching for answers to say, the question was, would their bat paths collide? If a righty and a lefty swung at the same time,
right,
would their bat paths intersect and cause a collision? And, I told the guys, there was, a group of five or six guys, and these guys, one of the guys plays for the Padres that was hitting, and he just got drafted this year. Another kid is going to Vanderbilt. We were messing around. And I thought that it wouldn't, my prediction, the other kids were like, do not do that. They were like, coach, do not do that. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Somebody's going to get hurt. That's what I would have said.
Somebody's going to get hurt.
Too. Yeah.
And I said, I don't think that's accurate. And they said, well, what? I said, because the bat, they're both going in the same direction at different speeds.
Right.
I said, so I don't know. Could there be a collision? Maybe you guys want to try it? And they were like, okay.
Right.
And
sure, why not?
There was, let's listen to coach. Totally. If somebody ends up dying, then it'll be on him.
Yeah.
But we found there was no collision of the bats at that point. Now, I didn't do it enough to actually see if there was. I guess if somebody was significantly slower than the other one, in theory it would happen. But MLB, Kelly Nash at the—
I was just going to say.
She's a really, really cool— I like her a lot. She's cool. Very cool.
Now, did she contact you? Did she call
you? She contacted you. She reached out. She reached out on Instagram.
See, that's so
cool.
This
is something on Instagram. I would have never— that's what one of the, some of the cool stuff. You can find bad negatives and everything. Mm-hmm. But this cool stuff in social media is, me, a kid, grew up in Brooklyn, right, in Coney Island, and now, and I'm just teaching, messing around with young ball players.
Sure.
You guys don't have any idea who I am, but through social media, you guys, that guy seems like a normal, it kind of sounds like a cool guy or whatever. Let's get him in here for the show. And now I'm sitting in Madison Square Garden at the radio station.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's pretty cool as far as it goes. And Kelly Nash happened the same way. It's the MLB Network. She reached out and said, could we have permission to use this? And I talked with her. I've talked to her
multiple times.
Amazing.
She wants to do some different things in it, but yeah, it was pretty interesting.
But that's so cool in the fact that, like, obviously if you're a baseball fan, you're all about MLB Network.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
the, you live and die by it. You turn it on at 12 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
Sure.
You're getting a baseball game.
Right.
No matter what
you're
it is.
You're getting something.
You're getting something. So it's like, for me to see that, you know, I follow you obviously.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, Kelly Nash picking you up.
You should
up
be worried about that. The fact that he follows yeah. you.
But no, but it's amazing also in the fact that, you know, I contacted Coach Ferber and I said, listen, we'd really like to have you on your podcast, and you actually go through your DMs.
Yeah.
Whereas another social media influencer would just be heading their ass.
Or have an agent
or right. whatever it is. You know, where do you see the future for yourself, I would ask?
Well, it's kind of it's tough to predict. I mean, I know I should have, you know, short and long term goals, and I do to a certain extent. I know there's different things about the way that I want to impact the game. Those are my long term goals. There's different ways that I want to impact how baseball players learn how to play. There are some things that I want to change about that one. I don't want to change the game. That's not my goal. I love the game. The game's pure and the game is perfect. Mm-hmm. I do want to change how, you know, the development process for young players and show that it's okay to not do it one way. You can do it. There's multiple paths to the destination of being a great ball player.
I'll wrap it up with this last question, unless Lou wants to ask one more. So here's a question for you. Nobody out, runners on first and second, guy up who can hit. What's the sign? Are you bunting? Are you...
Where are we?
You are
what
in the inning? Bottom of the eighth inning. Sorry. Okay, here we go. Bottom of the eighth inning, you're up by one. You have your best arm coming in the last inning to throw.
He's adding to this now because now he's thinking.
I'm thinking through it. You've had a guy just went eight innings, but he's out. You're going to put in your
I'm up by one?
You're up by one.
Okay.
So this would be an insurance. You get the insurance run because you never know. What are you doing with the situation?
Where are we in the lineup? Who's batting? Who's a hitter?
The number seven batter is in the lineup. The fifth and sixth guys. The fifth guy walked, and the sixth guy hit a single to right field, but he couldn't advance because
it was first and second.
Yeah.
No outs.
Yes.
Seventh inning on my
eighth
team.
Inning. Bottom of the eighth
my
inning.
My team
on your team.
I'm laying a bunt down
because you want to get the runner over. Would you do it earlier in the game too, or would you essentially?
I'm not a crazy bunter in these crazy situations where I don't feel because that's not how games are won at the highest levels.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't do a lot of things. Now, I will say, preparing guys for college, small ball is a big, big part of college, hitting
sure.
and running.
Sure, absolutely.
And so they have to know how to do that. But I also don't like taking the bat out of guys' hands that much. I feel, you know, that, you know, hard contact. Dude, bunt's a weapon. I think everybody should know how to bunt. I mean, because why? It takes no physical
right.
skill.
And people don't practice the bunt defense. I've seen so many times where the pitcher will get the ball, and then Paul Sewald the other day, and then throw a screwball down a right field line.
Oh, please.
Hasta lasagna.
Right.
Bobby Baez scores, get ready for game two. Everybody.
Right, right.
You know?
No, don't even get me started.
Yeah.
Paul Sewald, really.
Well, thank you very much, Coach Ferber. He's on Instagram. He's got 111 followers. He's the U.S.
111,000.
111,000 followers.
Yeah, he got 111,000.
Small discrepancy.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly.
It's Joe and his two friends around the corner following him.
Yeah. Did you say Mary Rottencrotch before?
Right.
Susie Rotten, whatever.
He's the U.S. Elite 2019 National Team Manager, and he's a certified evaluator for Team USA. Coach Ferber, 111,000 Instagram subscribers. You're awesome, dude. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Lou Pellegrino, Chris Libertini. We really appreciate
it. Real honored to be here. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
Pop Culture Meltdown.
If you'd like to email the show, email popculturemeltdown@gmail.com and find us on Instagram at popculturemeltdown. Catch Sid Rosenberg every weekday morning on Bernie and Sid in the Morning on 77 WABC. And follow on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sid Rosenberg. Find John Batchelor on The John Batchelor Show every weeknight on Westwood One and follow on Twitter at The Batchelor Show. And follow Coach Jason Ferber on Instagram at Coach Ferber. Special thanks to myself, producer Laura Ponte, our graphic designer, designer Ricky Soto, Tim Einkel with OG, and of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Rudzki. This has been Pop Culture Meltdown, Season 1, Episode 1, with your hosts, Chris Libertini and Lou Pellegrino.
They are intelligent. They are smarter than the most up-to-date supercomputers. We cannot underestimate it.